This is Science Friday from NPR. I'm Myra Flato. You may know that we're having a real big heat wave here in the East. Maybe you are also. And I was sure that I went outside yesterday and put a lot of water on my pot of pesto that's growing on my deck. Of course, it's not pesto yet. It's just a nice basil plant. But I've got big plans for it, and I want the summer heat to do it in, because while it is summertime and the living is easy, it's not easy for everything or everybody, especially plants. Not only does heat stress the plants, but they're under a lot of attack. Think about it. There's wilt, there's rot, blight, rust, and now the newcomer that worries me the most, the basil downy mildew. Oh, my plant is in trouble. This is a fungus that was first spotted way back in 2007 in the United States, and it's been spreading across the country ever since. So how do you identify the disease, and what can you do to preserve your pesto prospects, and what about the other sicknesses that are going around your garden? My next guest is going to run through some of the signs and symptoms of plant diseases you might encounter this season. Margaret McGrath is a plant pathologist at Cornell University. She's based at the Long Island Horticultural Research and Extension Center in Riverhead, New York. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much.
What does basil downy mildew look like? What should I watch out for?
It's a rather nondescript yellowing on the top side of the leaves is the first symptom. If you're lucky, you might see it in bands of yellowing. But not much, not a distinctive spot like you get with some other diseases. And then really the way to know is to turn the leaf over, and that's where you will see the fungus producing its spores and getting ready to multiply and head off to another garden.
Mm-hmm. And is it very widespread around the country at this point?
We're starting to get a number of reports in, so it is starting to appear in a lot of different areas.
And so what can we basil lovers do to protect our plants?
There's not a lot you as a gardener can do. There's, in fact, even for commercial growers, there's few fungicides at this point that are registered for this problem. I think one of the best bets is just to be alert and know where the disease is occurring. I've got a monitoring spreadsheet up on the web now, and just be aware of when conditions could be favorable in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
Monitor. If you can spot it early, harvest it.
Yeah, turn it into pesto. I imagine that this must be scaring a lot of commercial basil farmers.
It absolutely is. That's a very good point. Basil growers have not had many diseases they've had to deal with. They haven't had a need to apply many, if any, fungicides, so this very much changes production for them, greatly increases their costs. Some growers have had complete losses. I know I talked to one greenhouse grower who'd lost two crops last year, valued at $250,000 apiece.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
Wow.
Yeah.
1-800-989-8255. Talking with Meg McGrath, if you have a question about gardening and seeing some diseases in your garden this summer and you want to ask her about it, the folks over there at the Cornell Extension, they'll know everything about gardening, so I've been dealing with them for years. When was it first sighted? I said 2007, but it goes way back, further than that, doesn't it?
It goes back, but it was just a non-known disease. So there's a report from 1933 in Uganda, and then nothing until we get into 2000s and a lot of reports out of Europe.
Huh.
Which to me as a scientist is fascinating. What happened? Did the pathogen somehow find a way to get out of Africa, or did it evolve and it's now a more aggressive critter out there? A lot of interesting questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to another fear in your garden, and that is late blight. Tell us what that is.
Late blight, that pathogen, that's the one that's responsible for the disease that led to the Irish potato famine.
Right.
Very deadly disease. I think it is probably, arguably, our most nastiest plant disease, and how quickly it can kill plants. I think a lot of gardeners experienced that last summer.
Yeah, we talked
about
that.
Another situation that's changed. The pathogen has changed. The situation
Oh, really?
In the U.S. is, yes. We now believe that we have strains of the pathogen that can tolerate warmer temperatures.
Oh, no.
Yes. So we're seeing it later into the spring in Florida than we have in the past. We're starting to see it in the fall up in the north more frequently than we have. I've been here working as a vegetable pathologist since 1988 here on Long Island. First time I saw late blight was in 2002, and I've now seen it. Last year was the fifth time. Well, I've seen it this year. I take that back. So I've now seen it six times on Long Island.
Wow.
Things have changed.
They outwit us, don't they?
Yeah, they do. The other is the interconnection, which I think is very interesting with some of these diseases between farmers and gardeners. A lot of the diseases we deal with don't move very far. Mm-hmm. But the late blight pathogen, the downy mildew in basil, downy mildew in cucurbits, another big disease that's increased recently, the pathogens produce spores that could be moved by air distances. And now we have this interconnection. If a gardener doesn't control one of those diseases, they can impact a farmer, and vice versa. When farmers are having trouble controlling these diseases, mm-hmm. gardeners are going to be impacted.
Well, the
They're
fact,
all interconnected.
Yeah, I know the fact that you're having the same weather we're having, the fact that out so far the summer's been very hot and very dry.
Is fabulous. Particularly the sunny days.
Yeah.
Because any spores that get taken up into the air, the UV radiation is going to kill them.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get some calls in here. Let's go to Francis in Mount Shasta, California. Hi, Francis.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm well. Good morning.
Well, good afternoon to you. Are you there?
Yes. What I do to take care of the basil problem is I have a lot of trouble with basil myself, so I grow German or French tarragon, which is a super hot basil-like flavor. And that's the way I get around the problem with the basil.
Wow. I'll have to try that. Thanks for calling.
Another way is the spice-type basils. They are definitely less susceptible. We've started doing some variety evaluations, and they've turned up as being much less susceptible. Not the same flavor of a basil. Mm-hmm. What we're hoping to be able to do is secure some funding that we can figure out why those basils are less susceptible and create a true basil that's resistant.
What would be a couple of names?
Oh, there's all kinds. There's the lemons, the limes, the Thais, some of the red basils, mm-hmm. many.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some more free advice. Tracy in Fair Oaks, California. Hi, Tracy. Tracy, are you there? Last chance, Tracy.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I had a CHP officer behind me. I had to put my earphone on.
Oh.
Whoops.
We don't want to do that.
Not again. I have some wine grapevines out in the backyard. They're in their third year. And I just noticed this morning and haven't had a chance to look it up that some of the vines, the leaves are showing some dimpled marks, like little wrinkles, little spots of leaves. And I'm wondering what that is, if that's a pathogen.
Tracy, are you a wine expert?
I am a sommelier, yes. Now I'm getting into the enology and viticulture part of it.
Ah, well, you may know more than Meg does about grapes. There's only a little bit of grape growing on the North Fork there, right, Meg?
We've got a fair amount,
yeah?
Actually. It's completely out of my area of expertise, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you're right in between the forks there, so... Okay.
Well, maybe I'll just pick the leaves off and make some Greek dolmas out of them.
there you go. Make lemonade.
Something I recognize.
I'm a chef, too.
So good luck to you.
I can find something to do with them. Thank you.
Thanks. 1-800-989-8255. Is fungus really sort of the biggest thing of all kinds during the summer? It's hot and humid, that sort of weather?
Most of our plant diseases are caused by fungi. Mm-hmm. There are a number of bacteria that also cause diseases. They're going to be much more of an issue in a rainy time period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the bacteria, most of them are moved by splashing water.
Mm-hmm.
Some are moved by insects.
Anne in Avon, New York. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I live in Western New York State. We love Cornell University all over the place up here. And I have a question for Meg regarding transmission of the blight. I happen to plant a couple of basil plants that look healthy so far, and I'm watching them carefully, next to, because it was just a good place and the dirt was dug up, a new baby rose bush. And I'm just wondering if the basil starts to show evidence of illness, is the rose bush in jeopardy at all?
Yeah, because they get that mildew too, don't they?
Well, they can, but I guess that's a separate thing. But what should I watch for?
They are all very different pathogens, different diseases, number of different downy mildews, but they're pretty much all caused by different pathogens. In fact, there's one now on coleus, very similar, but enough difference that the pathogen can't go between the two.
So if the basil started to look sick,
you don't need to worry about the downy mildew on basil going to anything else. It's a very specific pathogen.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. Are we seeing more and more of these or is this for any special reason, seasonal, climatic, or is it just this is how things work?
I think we're just in a phase where pathogens have been doing some evolving on us, and we've moved them. Clearly, the basil downy mildew pathogen snuck in through our garden, got into the U.S. We've got a fabulous system to try and prevent new pests from getting into the U.S., but it does happen, and here's a case where it snuck in, probably on seed, contaminated seed.
Hmm. Interesting. Let's go to the phones. Matt in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there.
Good, thank you. I'm just calling as a comment. I do a lot of restoration work, and I'm a student of ecology, and a lot of what I'm hearing is kind of bringing about a point I like to drive home to a lot of people is using native plants, especially native plants that can provide some sort of edible value, is a good way to keep from introducing new pathogens, new blights that tend to come in with the ornamental trade that are having, you know, bad effects on our environment, kind of like the Chinese chestnut bringing in chestnut blight.
Good point, Meg?
Yes.
So we should try to stick to native plants, and they've been around for a while.
Unfortunately, we like a lot of those imports.
I know what you mean. Meg, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today.
You are welcome.
Meg McGrath is a plant pathologist at Cornell University based at the Long Island Horticultural Research and Extension Center out there in Riverhead, New York.